ਕਹਿਣੀ ਮੈਂ ਤੈਨੂੰ ਜਿਹੜੀ ਲੱਗਦੀ ਆ ਮੈਨੂੰ ਪੈਸਾ ਕੀ ਚੀਜ਼ ਬੇਬੀ ਚੀਜ਼ ਦਾ ਪਿਆਰ ਆ। Global poverty is something that worries all of us at some point. Even if it's just to selfishly say to yourself, gee, thank heavens I'm in this country where, you know, I can go to school, get a job, feed my family. And maybe more serious than that. The past 15 years has seen tremendous developments. The Millennium Development Goals of halving global poverty were reached pretty much well ahead of schedule. And so now we're looking to sustainable development goals, one of which includes ending extreme poverty everywhere by 2030. So how are we going with that? And what are the factors that make a difference? Does the middle class, the rising middle class, help drag a nation out of poverty? Joining me now to discuss just that point is Homi Karas. He's a senior fellow at the Brookings Institution. Homi Karas, welcome to Counterpoint.
Hello, Amanda. Thanks for having me on.
Now, we read about a rising middle class all over the world, but it surely can't happen in the same way structurally in each country because they start off in different positions and in different places with different trading opportunities. What can you tell us about the rise of the middle class as it differs globally?
Well, I think one of the really interesting stories about the middle class is how rapidly it's spreading from country to country. So if you go back to the 19th century, there was almost no middle class anywhere in the world. And then first it starts to take off in Europe, and then it spreads to America and then to Japan. But these are not the places in the world where there are the most people. And of course, places like Australia and Canada, etc. So up until about 1975 or so, there really weren't that many people in the developing world who were in the middle class. From then on, in China and India and Indonesia and places like that, you literally have billions of people in the middle class. And all of that is thanks to the economic opportunities that have been afforded by a globalizing, booming world economy.
Well, what kind of projections have been done across different countries to show what contribution that country makes? Their middle class, is it 10% of the world's middle class or 20%? How does that vary from country to country?
Well, obviously that depends on the size of the country and the size of their middle class. And so the large countries like China and India, large in terms of population, they're contributing most. But to give you just a quick sense, the global middle class probably is spending something in the order of $30 to $35 trillion every year. That's one third of the world economy. So this is really one of the principal sources of demand in the world. And a lot of that is now happening in Asia. In fact, if you look at the change in middle class spending, so not just the level, but the change, almost 90% is happening in the developing countries in Asia, partly because the existing middle class in Europe and the US and Japan and Australia is growing, but not all that rapidly. Whereas in these other places, the number of people in the middle class is growing, and each middle class family has a higher and higher income level as well.
And what about the difference, for example, a country like Brazil? Has their growing middle class done for them what the growing middle class in the United States did for the United States?
Well, not exactly, because unfortunately in Brazil, the middle class did take hold, and probably, you know, something a little bit over half of Brazil's population did become middle class. But Brazil has got caught in an economic trap that they haven't really been able to get out of. And the middle class has stagnated as a result of that. There are lots of theories as to exactly why this has happened. But I think the reality is that, really speaking, from the late 1970s up until now, so that's a 40-year period, growth in Brazil has averaged less than 1% per year. And so that's just not sufficiently strong to really pull the middle class along.
Now, do you see any parallels
putting aside the size difference between Brazil and China just for a minute, between the position of the middle class in Brazil and, say, Korea, and in China? And to rephrase that another way, is it a certain thing that China's middle class will drive its economy into the future?
So I think that for all countries, the middle class offers you the opportunity to move into the future. And one of the things that South Korea was able to do very successfully was really transition from an economy that was producing lots of goods to an economy that increasingly is based on knowledge and innovation and research and development. So South Korea has really gone into the frontier in certain sectors like electronics and semiconductors and other kinds of things. And so you contrast that with Brazil, which had a middle class but never really developed cutting-edge technologies in sectors that were big enough to drive the whole economy. So Brazil wasn't able to become an innovative, dynamic economy and became caught in what some economists have called the middle-income trap. And then you've got China, where, to some extent, the jury is still out. So China has this big emerging middle class, lots of people moving to cities, lots of young graduates that are now getting good jobs. So the potential is there. And then the question is going to be, will China be able to manage that transition in the same way as South Korea did? Or will it at some point become trapped like Brazil has? Mm. So I'm always optimistic. So I like to be optimistic about China, but it's still something that needs to be played out.
Yeah. I'm talking with Homi Kouras, Senior Fellow at the Brookings Institution in the United States, about the new global middle class. What are the changes that are going on there? And what role does the middle class play in developing economies? What sort of things at the, when I say the highest policy level, I don't mean the most senior people in China, but the most, what would you say, advanced theoretical thinking. What would those people be thinking about the options for China to try and ensure that their middle class does play that important role?
So one of the interesting things about China is that up until now, households and household consumption has actually played a relatively modest role in the economy. So household consumption in China is only something like one-third of their economy, whereas in most other places, it's probably double that. Instead, investment in China, so investment in infrastructure and housing, has played a much bigger role, and of course exports have played a much bigger role. So China has to move from that kind of economic structure to an economic structure that really is driven more by households, household preferences, and what households want. And the way in which they're doing that is now really through big online consumer outlets. So all these households now in China are buying much more of their goods online. That's giving people huge amounts of data and information on what households really want. And if they can then translate that into supplying that demand, then I think they'll do very well.
Mm. Can we move for a minute away from the role the middle class can play in dragging economy forward, driving that economy, into the role the middle class plays internationally in markets? If it's correct, and no reason to disbelieve it, that the vast majority of the global middle class is going to come from Asia, what impact is that going to have on the type of consumer demand we see? I mean, I understand that Chinese are now buying cars, that's a good thing, but tastes aren't always the same, are they? China and other countries in Asia don't necessarily want to mimic the style preferences of the West.
That's absolutely right. In fact, one of the characteristics of the middle class is they tend to like quite differentiated goods. So, you know, in China, not all that long ago, everybody was wearing Mao jackets. Well, that's gone out of style. People like to look and feel different to everybody else. And what that means is that local preferences become very important in middle class economies. And you'd better be nimble and alert to these local preferences. And so it's not that easy for global brands to penetrate, partly because they have to keep adapting their product to meet the local tastes. So you have the emergence now of big companies in developing countries because they were able to figure out what their local population wanted and then have been able to export that to the rest of the world. You know, Indian food and Bollywood movies, or whether it's, you know, things that the Chinese have been doing, or K-pop music from Korea. There are these items that are locally homegrown that then take hold elsewhere in the world.
Mm. Just to put some perspective on this, I see in an article you co-wrote that in the size of the middle class by region, in North America, in 2009, you would say it was 18%, but the estimate is by 2030 it will be down to 7%, so it's just under half. Mm-hmm. Whereas the Asia-Pacific in 2009, 28%, and by 2030, 66%. That's just over double. That's a tremendous switch, isn't it?
It is, and it is really driven by the fact that there are just so many people in the Asia-Pacific region. So China, of course, we always talk about China because in and of itself, that's, you know, 1.2 billion people or so. And that Chinese middle class is now growing very, very rapidly. It's already several hundred million strong, but it could potentially grow to be a billion strong. But then in addition to China, you have so many other countries in the Asia-Pacific region. So you have the Philippines, you have Vietnam, you have Indonesia, you have Malaysia and Thailand. So all of these countries have relatively large populations, meaning in the tens of millions, if not hundreds of millions of people, and they're growing very rapidly, and so their middle class is growing very rapidly. And so when you add all of that up together, you get some very large numbers indeed, and that's why we believe that the global middle class is really being driven now by what's happening in Asia.
Mm. Homi Karas, Senior Fellow at the Brookings Institution, thanks very much for joining us.
Thank you.
Now, Homi mentioned K-pop in the interview, that is Korean pop music. Well, to prove his point, earlier this year, Korean K-pop boy band BTS released their third album, Love Yourself Tear, and it debuted at number one on the US Billboard 200 charts, making it the first K-pop album to top the US albums chart and the highest charting album by an Asian act. This song is from that album. It's called Anpan Man, and it reached number three on the American charts. Not my taste, but it's worth listening to. You can go.